This is the PropTech VC Podcast. We give you unique insights into how innovative technologies are disrupting real estate. We interview top entrepreneurs, investors, and knowledgeable experts to share the inside scoop in this fast-moving industry. It's hosted by leading PropTech VC, Zane Jaffer. Let's dive into today's content.
Yeah, when you're an immigrant, you're not messing around. I remember when I got my immigration status in the U.S., you know, it was like, I'm going to raise as much money as I can because I sure as hell don't want to go back on a plane to the U.K., dumbfounded, empty-handed. Raise money, make sure the business is legitimate, and we're not messing around here. We need to build something big, you know?
Exactly.
There's a lot on the line. That's why immigrants work really hard, you know? Everything's literally on the line here.
Exactly.
Intriguing. So also, I mean, what I found interesting when I made the decision to invest in one was, usually I'm used to seeing one founder who's very passionate, outward facing. And here I was being, you know, flipped between Rico and Greg and yourself. And it's like the three of you are so aligned. And I think it's unique because you all face that problem. And I think when you're building a company, it's very important to make sure your founders are contexted. It's very tempting to just be and say, I'm the CEO and founder, I'm the sales guy, I'm going to talk to investors, and I'm going to shield the rest of my team. You know, my CTO is going to be, you know, in a dark corner in his own apartment or in a dark corner of the office, you know, on a computer all the time. And, you know, whoever else you may have on the other side, a designer or whatever. What's your thoughts on how founders should sort of get involved in other areas? I know you guys have, you know, built the company to a good scale now. Walk us through sort of the early days and how you guys figured out your roles as founders.
Yeah, you know, I think especially first-time founders, for us, you know, some Rico had done some projects, but Greg and I were first-time founders. And when you're in that situation, you really need to rely on the skill sets of your co-founders to kind of learn very quickly and be able to adapt to the needs of the company, you know, investors, customers. Because you don't have this, you know, wealth of 20 years experience or knowledge working in a specific industry. And so you need to sort of support each other, bounce ideas off each other. And, you know, all of our backgrounds were in a specific area. Mine was marketing, Rico was technology, Greg was real estate. But we learned very quickly that the way that we can really move quickly is by sort of supporting each other in each of our endeavors and in each of our categories of expertise. And so, you know, that I think for us, that was a key deciding factor to how we kind of handle investors and customers. And to this day, it's been a really valuable way for us to be able to approach different deals or opportunities with multiple different perspectives, but still through that process have great alignment so that whoever is in charge of that area, for example, you know, Greg on the investor side has that final decision and is the one that's going to be executing it. And so it gives that benefit of sort of being flexible, but also assigning responsibility.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I reflect on how I used to divide tasks between my co-founder and I, sometimes, and, you know, we weren't like you three. You three have very different skill sets, and that works really well. My co-founder and I were non-technical co-founders, so we had there was every excuse for why we could possibly fail. And there were times when we'd be like, okay, let's just draw a to-do list of what we have to do. And one time we were like, okay, you take the top half, I'll take the bottom half. Another time it was like, okay, who wants to do this? Okay, both of us want to do it. All right, let's flip a coin. Literally, you just have to get stuff done. And then it changes as you start to grow. Then you really have to look at, okay, who is the best place to do this? And how do we make sure we don't step on each other's toes and we build an organization? So on that note, Chuck, tell us a bit about One Rent. How big are you guys now? Tell us some stats to give the audience some perspective on, you know, what you guys are about.
Yeah, so One Rent now manages about $1.4 billion worth of residential property all across the West Coast. We're in about 7 major markets, that's 500 zip codes. And our model is unique because we don't have local offices to operate these rental properties. So we're able to do this in a sort of a distributed model. Been around for about six and a half years now. going on 2,000 doors under management and growing very quickly. And our specialty is sort of the small residential, single family rentals and yeah.
Yeah, now that's the hardest part of property management. It's much easier to manage a multifamily apartment. You guys cut your teeth in the hardest asset class, student and also single family. Single family is a nightmare. You know, you've got disparate properties, not concentrated, but spread out across a city.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much easier when you have one apartment, one similar floor plan, and, you know, one system you can put in place. You know, when you have an issue, you can have someone service the building and can deal with multiple issues at once. What are the challenges managing single family versus multifamily?
Yeah, well, I think you hit on it. Like, you know, it comes down to such what seem to be simple things as different floor plans that create huge amounts of complexity. There's no standardization in the single family rental asset class. You know, every home is different. Everyone has its quirks. Every tenant is different. And so it's very difficult to sort of systemize the maintenance and leasing of single family rentals without a technology play in the mix. And then also,
just to dive into that, how is it done today? I give you an example, right? I own some single family rentals, and it's on my YouTube show. We have a great property manager, but you know, Rebecca is her name, and she runs around from place to place. And now she's got a full-time maintenance person, but it's hard to scale the employee base beyond that, right? You're running around taking calls all the time, and it turns out to be such a hard job. And it turns out that most of these property management firms are mom and pop shops. Or the massive, massive, like, you know, national firms, and in between, there aren't that many. Walk us through sort of the problems with this too, and how you see them being managed by other firms.
Yeah, I think the first problem is just how complex the offline work really is. So like you said, you know, if you look at, for example, San Francisco, there's 50 plus property managers just within the city of San Francisco, which is, by land area, it's a pretty small city. And each one is spending a ton of capital and cash on labor, manual labor, to deal with all the complex offline tasks of property management. So like you mentioned, you know, you have people taking the calls from all the listings. You have people negotiating leases. You have people doing maintenance. So all of these different task categories are just manually driven and powered. And there's some technology in the mix, but the technology is only as good as the person using the technology. And what we find is property managers are running, you know, most of them are just creating a lifestyle business. They aren't looking to scale rapidly, and their margins, their profit margins are, you know, 20-30% maybe, because
that's generous. I've heard some of them are very low, tens or even fives.
Oh yeah. And they can't, and they all their growth is driven by just maybe some referrals. And, you know, I think the average property manager maybe has 200 doors under management, and they've built that over a decade of, you know, working. So that, you know, the fact that it's sort of this lifestyle business and the way it's run, and the manual, how intensive manual labor is, how thin the margins are, all of that contributes to a huge fragmentation in the industry. There's over 80,000 property managers across the U.S. And they're all running their own unique way of kind of doing things. So
it's tough too when you're a property manager and you get dragged by your clients, and you know, sometimes they want to, you know, one of them might be an investor who's buying 20, and you've got to make this decision. Damn, can I even afford to take that on? My bandwidth is so constrained. I'm going to make huge losses if I have to hire someone else. And so, you know, they either walk away from the business and they lose it, or they try to take it on and they lose it too because they're not equipped. It's a very hard place to be. The thing is, it sounds like an area that technology is difficult to bring to. You know, it's so unstandardized. How did you guys build such a great technology stack around this? And talk us through a bit about the technology. And just before we do that, by the way, before we dive into that, right? the viewers get a preview here of sort of how I felt. I once thought about building a similar company to OneRent. As you know, after I sold my company, I thought to myself, wow, property management is something that we've had a headache with on many fronts. You know, I buy single family, multifamily. I work with numerous different firms around the country. And this is an example of one of those times where you think you have a great idea, and then you meet three crazy founders. You know, we're talking to one of them right now, Chuck, but also Rico and Greg. And they tell you what they're doing, and you're like, holy crap, I'd be terrified to compete against them. These guys have made so much progress, understand the industry, are so driven. And you guys have done such a great job with bringing technology to areas that I wouldn't even think of, you know?
Yeah.
Talk us through the technology stack as well.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. I think it's, you know, the technology really only was clear to us where the technology is useful after us just manually forcing things through for that the first couple years. And we noticed that one of the key sort of threads that leads to a lot of manual intervention in property management is there's a lot of these conversations that are happening, like, you know, a conversation with the owner, with the renter, and that those conversations are driven by humans typically. And we've done that for years when we started. And we figured out though that there were a certain percentage of those conversations that could actually be computer powered and AI driven rather than a human having that conversation. So yeah. So like an example is something as simple as booking a showing to go see a place for rent, right? A property manager usually has someone in the office taking those calls, you know, 9 to 5. And the conversation is very much the same all the time. People typically ask, you know, when's it available? They may ask some questions about the unit, and then they're going to book a showing. So something simple like that, we took a natural language processing engine and used that to have sort of an AI bot, chat bot, speak to the consumer and answer those questions and then help them schedule. And if for whatever reason they ask a question that's outside of the AI, then a human, you know, that we've stationed in a kind of a centralized contact center that's cost effective, efficient, they can jump in the thread and pick up a communication right wherever the AI left off and then hand it back to the AI at the end. And we've done that for showings, we've done it for maintenance. You know, about 65% of our maintenance requests are resolved without having to send someone out to the property. And that's because so many of the requests we get are the same thing. Oh, you know, my garbage disposal is blocked or the power is not working. And there are basic troubleshooting steps you can use with renters to help troubleshoot maintenance without getting a human involved. So identifying those conversations and the patterns in those conversations has been translated into our tech stack, so that we're the only tech-enabled manager that actually has this full-on consumer-facing, you know, product experience for the renter and the owner.
Prior to that technology, how much time do property managers spend dealing with phone calls?
Oh, if you're an owner, let's say an individual landlord, you're probably spending 80 to 100 hours a year on your property, and that's if everything's going well. If there's a legal issue that comes up, that can suck away weeks of time.
Right, and here's what happens too: if you've got a portfolio of rentals you're managing, right, and you miss that phone call, you lose that prospective tenant.
Exactly.
That tenant is going to go to the next listing. And then, you know, you're trying to call them back. And I've had this happen, I got to confess, when I look for places, or used to look for places, I'll call up 20 in one go. And then I'll get like, you know, only get through to 3. And then I'll get like another 7 phone calls coming in. I'm like, sorry, who is this? Which property is this?
Yeah.
It's just a jumbled mess.
Yeah. And you're a busy guy, you know, having all those different threads of communication, you know, and you've got an account on Zillow and Realtor.com, and it's just your inbox becomes a mess, and you've got to almost create your own spreadsheet to manage it.
And then on the other hand, you're dealing with a maintenance issue, and you're expecting that your problem is an urgent problem for the property manager, but for the property manager, your problem is one of many, right? Secondly, how are you expecting them to understand everything about you and your unit, right? Like, you know, the specs that you have in your unit, because you've got such an unstandard floor plans. It's almost like call centers specialize in scripts, specialize in workflows. And you can use AI very powerfully. I don't know if you guys use it in this way through chatbots, but being able to understand so much about the consumer, where most questions that could be asked, such as, you know, when is my rent due? How much is my rent? I've got this standard issue that comes up. You can automate a lot of that in a way that would be unreasonable to expect from a human being when they're driving their car in between viewings and stepping out of a viewing suddenly to deal with your maintenance issue. That's urgent for you, but for them, it's just like, oh God, I gotta handle this. Let me try to route it to someone. Even the idea of routing a problem to someone. Do you know, I'm sure you know, I mean, Jesus, this is your business, but how much effort goes on to try and understand what is the problem, taking that data, putting it into a format that can then be sent out as sort of a spec to a maintenance worker. Because sometimes maintenance workers can show up and they're like, oh, I didn't bring the right tools.
Yeah, exactly. You always have to have eyes. You always got to get eyes on the property in the traditional model. And I tell you, one of the most valuable technologies that's that we've benefited from is 3D imaging of homes and being able to capture a 3D image of every home that we manage allows us to have, you know, a remote approach to maintenance as the first guard before we send someone out. So our team can, you know, go through the property and say, okay, here's where your circuit breaker is located. And even the AI can do that. They can say, here's the circuit breaker, here's the switch on the circuit breaker you need to flip to get the power back on. So technology like that will eliminate some of the barriers towards, you know, managing a large non-standard portfolio of real estate assets. And because, you know, single family homes are always going to be non-standard to a certain degree. Yes, there's build to rent and, you know, master plan communities, but the majority of the market will be unique homes across disparate locations. And right now those challenges keep people from being able to buy and invest in real estate wherever they want. They usually have to focus on one geography because of the property management challenge.